Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head. Attitude, bitch.
It is Monday, December 10th. You are listening to the Raw Reaction here on the Chair Shot Radio Network. Good evening, everybody. I am your host. My name is Harry Broadhurst. Joining me, as per usual, the Down Since Day One co-host, Tony Acero.
Good morning, Vietnam.
The third man, Andrew Ballish.
Hello.
For those that don't know, that's Vietnam that I just said good morning to. Thank you for replying.
I got your reference. Rest in peace, Robin Williams. Hey, Tony, I actually have a surprise for you.
Okay.
Let's take a step into the Cajun corners, shall we?
Like,
what up, Bailal?
Hey, what up, guys?
Oh, shit. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, man, not much. It's been a while.
What are you on, like, your eighth kid?
Number four. Just number four.
Well,
number four came yesterday morning.
Wow. And you're calling us today. You must need help.
Not sure how much Andrew did or didn't listen to the show before he became one of the co-hosts here, but this is one of the original third men in the booth here on the Raw Reaction. This, as longtime listeners will know, is Rick Bailon.
Oh.
Hey, Rick, you want to do some CLC predictions while we got you on the air? Or are you going to go ahead and just wait and get back to being a father once again?
Oh, no. I got all four of my beautiful babies are sleeping right now, so I got time to get some predictions out there.
All right, let's go ahead and get to this here. Give me about 30 seconds to pull up the Wikipedia page because I wasn't ready for doing the predictions. I just kind of sprung that on you last minute. We did not talk about that. I just wanted to surprise Tony.
Color me surprised.
You guys talk, so that way there's no dead air.
Andrew, I don't know if this is weird for you. It's like my ex meeting my current girl. I don't. Are you okay?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I'm okay with it so far. We'll see how it goes.
It's only a one-off. Don't worry. He's not leaving you for his ex. At least not that I know of.
You never know. If things get really good, then Tony gets to ride the tricycle. So then we talk later. So it's okay.
And let me tell you, it wouldn't be my first go-around.
Oh, so you got that championship Jesus. Belt you're selling.
I've had four full reigns. It's been a beautiful run. Yeah.
So your trios championship is definitely more prestigious than New Japan's. That's impressive.
You know, I try to keep things interesting.
I like how Andrew keeps trying to make New Japan relevant on this show.
I mean, it's relevant. Just because you don't watch it doesn't mean it's not relevant.
Yeah, like Rick's relevant just because he hasn't been on the show in a year.
I think it's been longer than a year, actually.
Andrew, do you know what Rick named his child?
Tony?
No, close.
Oh.
What is his name?
His name is
Owen
Rick.
Jericho.
Owen, that's
so
fantastic. Holy shit.
First of all, your wife is a saint for letting you do that.
She likes the name too. She helped pick it out.
To be fair, she's a saint after the fourth kid too, if you really want to think about that whole battle.
Not many know this, but Rick chose the name the same way he picks the order of people in the fantasy league that he runs. Out of a hat.
All right, Rick, you ready?
I'm ready.
Rollins and Ambrose for the IC title.
I actually think Rollins retains.
I'm going to go straight in order here off of the Wikipedia list just to save a little bit of time. Strowman and Corbin, TLC.
Strowman.
Rousey Nia for the Raw Women's title.
I'm going with Ronda Rousey.
And why is it that you dislike Nia Jax?
She's a female Bastion Booger.
Not where I thought he was going to go with that, but I guess that works. Just I need the Steiner Math promo in my queue. Anyway, Elias and Bobby Lashley in a ladder
match.
Elias and Bobby Lashley in a ladder match with a guitar.
Elias.
Balor and McIntyre, assuming McIntyre or Balor is back. Excuse me.
McIntyre. McIntyre is not losing any time soon. That dude's got a rocket ship to him.
Natty and Ruby in a tables match.
Man, Natty has to win, I would think. They can't do
all
that
stuff.
Yeah,
you'd think so.
Yeah, but I mean, it's wrestling. Sometimes the heels do beat the faces. It's not like a movie where the hero always comes out on top. But usually when it gets this, this bad with the heels bringing out dead fathers, you would think that the face is going to have to get its comeuppance. The heel is going to have to get its comeuppance, and the face is going to have to be victorious.
Yeah, you would think that in Hollywood the baby face always goes over, but I remind you, if he dies, that was your cue, Tony.
No.
If he dies, what? What happened?
He turns a different color because you just dyed him. Get it? Now go to the next match.
Daniel Bryan and AJ Styles for the SmackDown title, and fuck both of you.
Daniel Bryan. Dan Bryan's not going to lose the title this quickly.
Becky Lynch defends the SmackDown Women's title in the TLC match against Charlotte and Asuka.
Yeah, this one's actually, I would think, the toughest one for me to pick. I'm just going to say Becky because I can't see her losing her momentum right now. But, I mean, I could see Charlotte winning it again or even, I can actually see Asuka out of out of nowhere, pulling a fast one type of win. But I'm going to go with Becky Lynch.
The Bar versus the New Day versus the Usos in a triple threat for the SmackDown tag titles. My rumor mill that I'm hearing says that this will be turned into a ladder match tomorrow night on SmackDown.
I'm going to go with my fantasy team, the Usos, because I got Jay on my league and they were part of the one victory that SmackDown got at Survivor Series. I think the Usos are actually going to win this one.
You keep your Which hands and your points to yourself. Buddy Murphy defends against Cedric Alexander for the Cruiserweight title in what will probably end up on the kickoff because fuck the Cruiserweights.
I'm going to go with Buddy Murphy.
All right. Well, there's an 11th match as well, but it's the finals of the Mixed Match Challenge. We don't know who the two teams are, so we're not predicting that match. If you want to give thoughts there, you're welcome to, but we're not doing an official prediction for this match.
All right.
Take that as that you're not doing any kind of prediction for it. Good to know. All right, Rick. Thanks for calling in, man.
I don't. All right, guys. It's good to hear y'all voices again.
I love you, Rick.
I'm
okay,
so jealous right now.
Drew, it's hurt.
So jealous. I'm going to sob for a while now.
You got Andrew in his feelings. Did I use that correctly, Tony?
I mean, as good as Drake did.
Thanks for calling, Rick. We'll talk to you later, brother.
Later, brothers.
All right, so let's get to the actual reason that we're here. We're here to talk the December 10th edition of Monday Night Raw. We come to you from San Diego, California, which is near Tony's neck of the woods, but not quite there.
It's like 3 hours away. That's not even that there.
I'm 2 hours away.
I thought you were in
That's
L.A.
Not terrible.
I am. L.A. is roughly 2 hours away from San Diego.
I thought it was three. Okay.
Well, not when I do.
And our opening.
I see how that is.
I do get the feeling that Tony is probably a Leadfoot. Our opening segment is Seth Rollins coming out to bitch about the way management has been on Monday Night Raw. Baron Corbin comes out to confront him. Seth airs his grievances face-to-face and calls out Corbin for a match. Corbin declines until Seth calls him a coward. And then they make the TLC match on Raw for the first time in 6 years. Andrew, quick, what was the last TLC match on Raw? Can you name it?
Fuck no.
Tony, can you?
The song called Waterfalls by TLC.
Miz and Lawler.
Oh, we're talking about wrestling.
Only barely.
Anyway, you guys are no help tonight. That sets up our main event for later on in the evening. We'll go ahead and do that as well, just to kind of tie everything together here. Your main event is the aforementioned TLC match for the IC title with Heath Slater as the referee. Heath Slater turns heel during the course of the match, trying to cost Seth Rollins the match. Rollins is able to recover and pull Corbin off the ladder. A powerbomb through a table in the corner leads to Rollins retaining his IC title, easy for me to say, at approximately 26 minutes aired with commercials, about 20 of which was shown. Tony, I'll start with you here first. What were your thoughts on the opening segment and then the match itself?
Oh, hold on. Let me lean back for a bit. This might take a while. I'm kidding. So one thing that we have to focus on is the reality that the WWE was willing enough to admit to their faults over the past couple of weeks in by way of Baron Corbin. This was a very interesting avenue to go about. It's about as and it was about as useful as any real company just holding a press conference and saying, we really, really suck and we're shitty at our job and we know that, but we're gonna blame this one guy. So that's essentially what they did, and it brought about one of two things. Either the writers and the WWE are fully aware of how much they suck and simply don't care, or smarter than us. And what I mean by that, and this has happened with the WWE before, where they will give us a shitty product, not because they want to give us a shitty product, but because in their mind, what they're saying is, don't worry, we're going to fix it. Don't worry. We got this. Like, I know you guys are impatient. You take, you know, you're just on Twitter talking shit. You won't even let a story fully advance. You won't do this. You won't do that. What they're doing is they're this moment right here is their ability to come back to us and say, see, I told you so. I told you Baron Corbin was going to get his comeuppance. I told you the faces were going to triumphantly win. I told you we were going to call him out on our bullshit. Now, I don't find that to be true because these guys don't write stories that last longer than Monday night. So it comes off a little insulting and just not entertaining in terms of anything, really, to watch a product willingly insult itself on television. I don't know. I just find that counterproductive. It didn't make any sense to me. It made me roll my eyes. I wasn't entertained. I wasn't like, oh, God, yes, finally, Seth is the voice of reason. Speak for me, my long-haired lion man. None of that. I just felt like, all right, well, this is dragging on. Speaking of dragging on, we got a match at the end of the show, which did just that. Nobody wants to see Baron Corbin do 25 minutes of anything, and especially wrestle a match. When you do something like this, when you put a person like him in a match for 20 minutes plus that are there, start to show. When he's in a smaller moment, when he's squashing someone, when he's putting, you know, the hurt on him and having 10 rest holds in 7 minutes, you can't see all the flaws. You know they're there because you could feel them, but you can't see them. But when he's in a 20, 25-minute match, you could see that he's really, really bad at selling,
He's really, really bad at favoring any one limb and or attack, and he's especially bad at being within the ring of someone. Like, he has speed, but then he doesn't. You know, he has control, but then he doesn't. And they have to play to that. There's a reason why during this entire match he was in control, with the exception of a few small moments and the end. And it's because, realistically, he's just not good. When I read an interview with him just a couple of days ago, whether it was in character or not didn't really matter to me. He just comes off as falsely entitled, and that's because they've given him the position that they've given him. So when he has a match like this and you start to see, like, whoa, wait, hold on, bro, you have no redeemable qualities, then that becomes really, really problematic, because not only do you want to see him – no, you don't even want to see him lose. You just don't want to see him exist. Like, I just don't want you here at all. Like, I don't – I want you as far gone as your hair. Like, that's just – there's nothing happening and closing of Raw made me feel.
Andrew?
That was a whole lot of word. Tony word real good.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, you're not wrong. And my, as much as, you know, I voiced my dislike, dismay, just overall, I guess, revulsion too, much like what Tony said with the way they're spinning this whole anti-Baron Corbin, oh, the ratings are down and it's your fault, and ha, I'm the voice of a generation type thing. Yeah, they've done this a lot, like the last year or so, and I feel like that's how the writers write, where Tony's right, which that's a lot of right, but, you know, regardless, different wording, you know, spelled differently, it's fine. But Tony's right where they write weekly, but I think it's because they're actually just trying to base off Twitter reaction to see what the hell happens. Like, even though we're a Raw-based show from Twitter, where, you know, Daniel Bryan went from just being, now he's a heel and he kicks people in the dick, and what's his reasoning for it? And then they kind of dovetailed off of that whole vegan thing that blew up, so now he's Mr. Fickle, evil vegan heel who just hates plastic bottles and people that eat meat and all that other shit. So it's funny how much the IWC actually does influence them, regardless of the fact that the IWC complains about them not listening to them. And as many people like to point out, it's not really a heavy number of fans that the IWC really encapsulates, but it's just, it's amusing as shit to see them play to the, let's just throw a number out there for arbitrary fun and say, like, the 10% that's the IWC. And it's just, and people buy into it for one reason or the other. Like, you know, Tony hates it because it's pandering, it's demeaning, it's condescending. But then you have other people be like, oh, so now they listen. Now they want to pay attention. Or, yeah, that's right, Seth. You tell them that's exactly how we feel. I'm glad somebody's a good writer on that team. It's a weird way to fucking write. You know what I mean?
What about the main event itself?
It happened. It was slightly entertaining because it was, you know, spot after spot and then commercial break, but it wasn't anything special. Like, Ambrose and Rollins will probably put on a better match in 6 days and, you know, try half as hard and use less weapons.
A, I'm catching feedback from somebody. I'm not sure who it is. B, I actually enjoyed the main event tonight, and I think that while I don't necessarily agree with giving away a TLC match on free TV 6 days before the pay-per-view, if you had to do so, then do so in a way that you can have the person who you can't deliver in that match on Sunday with Corbin if Strowman is still out. Because I feel like if Strowman is going to be there on Sunday, it's going to be in a squash, it's going to be a nothing match. Strowman's just going to run clean through Corbin, and we're not really going to see any of the accoutrements that traditionally come from a TLC match. So that being said, there's also there's something refreshing about seeing a babyface standing tall at the end of the show after the way we've gone off the air on Raw recently, to have the opportunity to have a couple of shining moments here for the good guys to overcome. We saw it 2 weeks ago with last week, with Finn Balor, and then we saw it again tonight with Seth Rollins. And what we're about to talk about next. Not quite over my sore throat yet. I had to mute the microphone for a second. All right, let's go ahead and talk about our opening contest. It is a 3-on-2 handicap match where the authors of pain team up with their manager, whatever word they're using, that is it, manager, Drake Maverick, to take on Bobby Roode and Chad Gable. In the end, Maverick gets the pin, goes for the pinfall after the AOP do the damage with a double team power bomb, the super collider that puts down Roode, and then the power bomb neckbreaker combo to Gable. Roode has a chance to recover off of the super collider, and by the time that Maverick goes for the pinfall, Roode is able to crucifix cradle Maverick on the mat, and Bobby Roode and Chad Gable are the new Raw Tag Team Champions at 8 minutes and 30 seconds. Andrew, you're up first here. What did you think about the title change? Do you like it? Do you dislike it? Would you have saved it for Sunday?
Well, I wouldn't have wanted to see a handicap match on Sunday, so it makes sense, I guess, and could possibly cause some kind of rift between Drake and the AOP, and then they get rid of him because, honestly, he doesn't add anything to the team. Like, I don't know why he was really brought in. Like, he doesn't speak necessarily, like, fantastically for them. He has his own agenda. He has his own gimmick. And the wonderful urine jokes that have kind of permeated through the show last 3 weeks doesn't help anything. And I'm kind of over it. Like, at least Leo Rush serves a point. Like, Drake Maverick really doesn't. So it was nice to give a title change on a Raw. So I guess the live crowd probably really appreciated it, and nobody saw it coming, but what's it really matter? Like, Tony, weigh in.
Well, I, for one, think they did a piss poor job here. I mean, at least Gable got new trunks out of it, so that's cool.
And a robe.
And a robe. You know, he's coming up in life. Roode? Yeah, sure. No, I mean, we'll go back to, I think, last week where we can only be so excited about this because we don't particularly care about anyone involved. The AOP came to Raw, like, with a lot of heat, and then they disappeared for a few months. I think it was a few months. And then they came back and were rebuilt without ever being broken down, and they became something a force to be reckoned with. And then they won the titles, and they just kind of didn't matter anymore. So the match that happened tonight, this was a culmination of a bunch of people who no one cared about. And then it's minor, it's small, but again, this is those little things that bother me with Raw, with the writing and specifics. Backstage, after they win the titles, Charlie walks up to them and asks them how they won the match. And it just threw me off, considering she should have probably been watching. There's a weird way to question that. Roode said something along the lines of, like, we told ourselves if we worked hard every day and worked hard every week, then we would get this chance. And it's just funny to hear someone say, if we worked hard every day and we worked hard every week, we knew we would get an opportunity to win with a crucifix pin on someone who is less than 205 pounds. Again, it's not a big deal. It just doesn't make sense to me. It's weird. It's like they throw the cliches out there because they assume they're going to work, and they assume we're not going to pay attention to what we just fucking saw. You know, like, I know sometimes taking words too literal, like Charlie saying, how did you win this, didn't literally mean how did they win the match, but also it could have been that. And also, it's just, I don't know, it's like watching two idiots have an entire conversation. It's just like you just roll your eyes multiple times and wish you could help, but know for a fact that you can't because it's too late. So you just say, well, that's the way the world is.
Also, so you didn't even appreciate.
Any Trump speech.
But I was going to say you didn't appreciate or at least give a little pass to the fact that Roode did try to play up the fact that Corbin's been screwing them over and holding them down. So that's kind of where the hard work thing could be interpreted from. Like, we just kept trying to get out from under his thumb, under the iron fist, so to speak, and just get around the bullshit that Corbin causes. And then look, it finally paid off.
Yeah, I guess. That sounds glorious.
It was a bad night in general for interviewers. The lady that did the interview with Rollins earlier in the show, they all kind of – I think it was Kayla Braxton, but I'm not sure. She completely flubbed her lines in that interview too.
Yeah, she did.
She did.
Moving forward, the Natalya segment is up next. She comes out, says that she's sorry that she didn't come out smiling, even though she came out smiling. That one was just for you, Tony, since you put me that in your review. And then talks about the fact of what Ruby Riott and the rest of the Riott Squad have put her through since the passing of her father, whose name she finally says, despite the fact that they've said his name every fucking week.
It's true.
Eventually, Ruby Riott comes out and tells Natalya that she's going to finish what she started at TLC, and then reveals a table that has Jim Neidhart airbrushed onto it, and says that after she puts Natalya through that table on Sunday, Natalya and her father will be closer than they've ever been, assuming by which it means Ruby's going to kill her. Dark. Tony, help.
I can't help. It's Natty. It's Natalya. There's no redeemable qualities here. There's nothing worth watching. So she comes out, like Harry mentioned, smiling, and says that she's sorry she can't smile. But just, again, it's one of those things where the cliche doesn't match what we're seeing. What we're seeing visually doesn't match what they're verbally spouting out, and it becomes disjointed, which causes every viewer to not be interested. Aside from that, you have Natalya throwing out people who, if by now you're a younger fan, you don't care or know about what she's talking about. And I know there's a lot of purists who may be insulted by that, but it's 2018. The Montreal Screwjob have been roughly 20 years ago. There is an entire fan base that has no idea what the fuck she's talking about, which is fine. I'm not upset about that. What I'm upset about is her using this particular aspect of her relationship with people randomly and when seemingly it works for her. And I'm not talking about her, Natalya, the person. I'm talking about the writers bringing it up when it's convenient. Anyone in the crowd that knew what the Montreal Screwjob, at least like us, doesn't see the direct correlation. I get it. That caused the Hart family to be tainted and blah, 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 blah. I don't know. It seems like a bit of a stretch. Also, I don't think anybody saw Brett punch the owner. I think we saw him spit in his face. I know it happened. And then you get finally to her, you know, being proud of representing her family. That's all well and good. It just seemed like you were trying to add weight to something that A, didn't need it, and B, would not be able to hold it. Too much weight here. Ruby already broke sunglasses that you expect us to care about. Now we're supposed to care about the entire Hart family because that's where he came from. It would have worked, and it could have worked if written differently and over a slightly longer period of time and did not start with sunglasses. And then you have her saying, like screaming that she's going to finally say his name. And that just didn't make any sense. Follow that up with some crying that lacked tears. This one felt real. Natalya actually had some moments there where I was like, oh shit. Okay. She's using her tragedy and putting it into play with her job and making it real. But the moment that I felt she was making it real, she said or did something that just took me right back out of it. And that's a performer's job. You know, that's something that they can and can't do. Natalya's never been able to do it. She can't emote correctly. And that's coming from a person who probably can't either. I don't know. I was never in a school play. I don't do performance live. I'm not really a public speaker outside of the podcast and bartending. I don't know. So this isn't from a place of like judgment as a performer. It's simply, this is what I expect from you and you've never been able to do it. Maybe you should work on that. Then you go to Ruby, who, I mean, she's a little bit better. But no matter what happens, no matter what they say, no matter what they add on to this, all it comes back to is a pair of sunglasses that no one really believes were, you know, Jim's. And then the whole like, sticker on the table. I mean, that's cool, you know, whatever.
it's not. I'm not gonna sit here and roll my eyes on that. It's fine. It's gonna look pretty bad when Ruby goes through the table with his pitcher on it, because either way, someone's going through that table. I'm almost positive. So, what really do they gain from this,
Andrew? They gain Andrew.
I was expecting there to be a commercial for like WWE Fatheads or something like that after that one. Like, you too can put a superstar on a wooden table and like market it somehow. That would have been great. But yeah, it was a rough watch. And for the same reasons that Tony pointed out, like, Natty has never been good at speaking. She's never been good at connecting to people. Hell, the only people that I see like her are usually women, and they happen to be Canadian and like cats also. So she's just like the Canadian cat mom that they find adorable because she's just this Canadian dork of a woman. So it's like, that's nice. Like, she might be a sweet person. Don't get me wrong. I don't care. That's not the character. That's not what I'm sitting here trying to watch on TV. No one needs that shit. And yes, the sunglass thing is stupid as fuck. I have a feeling the whole saying the name thing could maybe be some kind of tie-in to, like, I don't know, Total Divas or something. Who knows? Like, I don't watch it. I don't know if you guys watch it. But they could just be trying to tie in a whole bunch of things that recently had Natty dealing with stuff and trying to make it into a big overarching point. But the point that really, really, really bugs me, like, the last couple weeks, and I know Harry's pointed it out, I think Tony pointed it out at different points, why are all the heel women pretending to be Alexa Bliss? Why is it always the mean girl? Oh, Pookie, are you sad? Do we need to help you out? Look, we're going to be condescending and snotty, and this is exactly how we sound and get our point across. You're going to cry about it? It's like, what the fuck? Have a different personality than mean girl.
I thought there was going to be something further upon there. I wasn't ready to move on quite yet.
That's all that's needed.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go further. I did not want to go further than that. We don't need more rants at the moment. You were already kind of hyped up for this one, so I thought you had something queued up, because you did not start off this segment very nicely, Harry.
Yeah, I was looking for a sound effect, but I can't find it, so I'm just going to go ahead and move on, because honestly, that's how I feel about most Natalia segments these days. It's better to just move on.
Ring the bell. Oh, wait, that's a different show.
Don't make me hit your sound effect, because I will. Pod is War, available here on the Chairshot Radio Network.
Chill.
You're welcome. Some bitch. Anyway, Finn Balor is not here due to injury. In actuality, Finn Balor is out ill. He should be good to go for Sunday. McIntyre says that he beat Balor so badly that he wasn't here tonight and that he will finish the job on Sunday. That being said, tonight Dolph Ziggler gets his. Ziggler had a promo earlier in the show talking about the fact that he doesn't need to be cheered. He doesn't need to be booed. He just needs to be Dolph Ziggler. I was waiting for him to say, I'm not a good guy. I'm not a bad guy. I'm just the guy. And then that would have given me literal reason to want to punch Dolph Ziggler in the face. The match itself, the rematch from last week between Ziggler and McIntyre, is up next. This time, McIntyre picks up the win with a Claymore as Ziggler is setting up the super kick. What I wanted to talk to you guys about specifically here is the fact that Ziggler goes for the super kick late in the match and collapses, and McIntyre does to Ziggler exactly what he did to Kurt Angle in their match. And I can't help myself. The comment that I believe I sent to you guys in our group chat was, Super Dick McIntyre may be the best thing going on Raw right now. Eventually, it is the Claymore, and then a post-match beatdown, which gets Dolph kicked into the LED board at ringside with another Claymore, to leave Ziggler laid out and McIntyre standing tall going into his match with Balor on Sunday. Andrew, your thoughts on a little bit of redemption, perhaps, for McIntyre tonight, getting his win back against Ziggler, and rather this is the end of this between these two people?
I mean, it better be the end of it between these two people, but you never know. You really, sadly, never know, because McIntyre might need some kind of layover feud before Royal Rumble or something. And I don't know. It depends. It kind of depends probably on how the Universal and Intercontinental scene start to queue up to see exactly where Drew lands. But yeah, the match was okay. It had a lot of callbacks to last week, especially the nearly bot, and then, you know, Ziggler tried to hit the super kick like he won with last week, and then he collapsed thanks to you know, super dick. But you know, it's like what are you gonna do? Like it's what you expect from Dolph Ziggler. I just love the Claymore and most things Drew McIntyre, so yeah, there's that.
Tony.
I want to give major props to Drew McIntyre for the promo that he did before the match, because he showed once again that he's super fucking amazing. He took the loss of an undefeated streak and threw that shit in your face. He's like, everybody loses. This shit don't faze me, even if it does. He's like, the Undertaker lost at WrestleMania. Basically, any undefeated streak from here on out doesn't matter. I was like, oh shit, Drew. Well, damn, you're right. Outside of that, nothing else after this needed to happen or I cared about. I didn't gain anything this week that I didn't already achieve last week by them facing each other and by Drew winning. If anything, him beating Dolph Ziggler's ass in like less than a minute would have been more effective to show that, you know, don't fuck with him. So I'm not mad about it, but I also just didn't really get anything from it. Outside of that second kick into the ringside, which was pretty brutal, or looked brutal, I'm pretty sure they were protected, at least I hope. I didn't really get much out of this. I don't know what they were going for by getting the rematch, other than the possibility of them not having anything else. So, yeah, moving on.
Well, I think it was a lot of it to get McIntyre's heat back after taking that loss to Ziggler last week, even if it was with the Finn Balor assist. I don't think Ziggler or McIntyre needed his heat back because of the promo that you talked about before the match, though. But in a roundabout way, it was their way of doing so. Highlights of last week with Heath Slater beating Rhino and then being made into a referee. I kind of figured that this was going to end up coming into play on Sunday when Slater would cost Corbin his match with Strowman, but I guess they decided to actually go through with the Slater heel turn tonight in the main event, as we talked about a little bit earlier on in the show. I don't know why you turned Slater heel. He's one of the few guys that I think the fan base has a general connection with just because they feel like he was kind of a self-made man here. What are your thoughts on the Slater heel turn, them officially aligning Slater with Corbin tonight on Raw?
I mean, I don't think it was like a heel turn as much as it was a forced, you know, succumbing to a bastardized version of a boss. Chances are, if they want to, if they're curious at all to see how well Heath Slater does with a push, then they'll stretch this out for, you know, until the end of TLC, and then have him, you know, just get his job back. No one wants to see Heath Slater as a referee, and the only reason why we saw the heel turn, as you call it, is because he's got kids. So I think that I don't think that he's gone full heel yet. He's just doing the bidding of Baron Corbin because he has to, or he feels like he has to.
Andrew, same question.
And basically same answer. Like, I didn't see it as a heel turn. Like, when he got bumped earlier, you heard the crowd still chant, he's got kids. Then even after he pushed him and Seth had that stare down, and right before Seth super kicked him, like, you could see he's just like, I had to. I've got a family. Like, he made me do it. Kind of like, you know, he needs the money. He needs the job. Like, that's the character. The character is, if he loses his job, he, you know, he goes broke and his family suffers and, like, can't feed his kids. And that's the shtick. So he stuck to it pretty well. And I'm okay with it. Like, he's doing what he has to do. I wouldn't call it a heel turn, though.
All right, we move on. Our next singles contest is Bayley and Alicia Fox in a preview of tomorrow night's Mixed Match Challenge Raw Final. Bayley to team with Apollo Crews now that Finn Balor is hurt / sick / whatever reason they don't want him doing a job in Mixed Match Challenge. Alicia Fox teams with Jinder Mahal. And it was at this point that Tony lost any and all respect for Apollo Crews.
How dare he put his hand where it doesn't belong? Look, I know you're hurting for a push and you really need some notoriety and a spotlight, but in no world is it okay for Apollo Crews to grab Sasha the way that he did. I have bench pressed two women in my life, and the only time I grabbed her vaginal region was because I was dating her. It also turned into a great night of sex. So, Apollo, you are officially on notice.
I have nothing to add to this segment. I don't even think Andrew needs to go here. I just wanted to hear Tony bitch because I knew it was coming.
Yeah, that was funny.
Because I knew it was going to happen as soon as he military pressed her. Charlie Caruso interviews Dean Ambrose backstage, calling him the Lunatic Fringe. Apparently, Ambrose is officially retiring that nickname once and for all. We'll give him a new nickname later on, probably something like the Siren Man, because creative is stupid like that at times. And now that I've put that into the universe, it'll probably happen and I'll feel like a giant dick. Anywho, they go back and show the footage of Ambrose turning on Rollins the night of Roman Reigns' leukemia reveal. And when asked what Roman would think about this, Ambrose simply says, "Who cares?" So apparently the rumors that they're going to use Roman going forward more with his real life issues in their storylines appear to be true based on this year. Tony, we've kind of seen them do this before. The death of Eddie Guerrero immediately springs to mind. Are you okay with storylines like this?
Look, Eddie Guerrero was my favorite Mexican in the world outside of my mother. And Randy Orton saying that he was burning in hell, like, triggered me a little bit, but ultimately I was like, whatever. It just means that writers suck at their job because, you know, that's like the cheapest form of attention grabbing. Same thing several years later. I will never compare Eddie to Roman. But if we're comparing their lack of ability, then to me, again, it's just, it's eye roll inducing. It doesn't offend me. It doesn't bother me. I'm not going to write a 17,000 word column on 411mania.com about how badly the WWE is or how bad they are for using this. I'm more concerned about, again, taking one small segment and just looking at it and saying, what was the point of this? The video package did not give any new information. We saw this. This was like the videos that they play before the pay-per-view, like if you were to order it early, or if, not even order it early, if you just watch the channel before the pay-per-view even starts, this was the video that they'd show you to get ready for, you know, TLC, and then fucking 4:59 comes up and they're like, did you order it yet? There was no reason for this to be on Raw. And that was only amplified by the reaction of Dean Ambrose immediately after. So what do you think about this? Pause. Video package rolls for roughly 3 minutes. Come back to the interview. Dean Ambrose is standing there like, whoa. Okay. Like, what kind of ploy was that? Who wrote that segment? Who said, okay, so Dean is going to cut a little mini promo. We're going to show the video package about the TLC match coming up. And then we're going to ask him, well, what do you think about that? And then Dean Ambrose is going to stand there quietly for a good 23 seconds. Beat, 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 next. And you're just like, well, what the? Did you just waste my fucking time? Because I think you did. And that's kind of bothersome.
Tony, apathy is supposed to get heat. Don't you know these things?
Well, then you're turning me into a fucking heel.
I mean, I don't think I had to try very hard to turn you into one of them. Come on. But anyway.
That ship sailed a long time ago on this show. Continuing.
Yeah. But that promo was, I thought it was going somewhere interesting, to be honest. Because I've either brought it up on this show before or just in random conversation. But why didn't they just go with Ambrose's 24/7 documentary reasoning where he was closer with Roman. And losing Roman means he loses his work wife or road wife or whatever he called him. And it's that simple. I don't like Seth as much as I like Roman. And he started that with the beginning of the promo where he was saying that Seth was using the architect thing to hold everybody down and he was only trying to elevate himself and it kept him and Roman down. Like, Ambrose put him and Roman in the same bucket at some point in this promo. And then you just piss it all away with the, well, what would Roman say about that? And I go, I don't give a fuck. Like, you can't care in one sentence and then say you don't give a shit in the next sentence without just being confusing and stupid. And it was bad writing. And I thought it was going somewhere interesting for fucking change. And then that whole video package pause and then that stupid fucking line ruined the whole fucking thing for me. But maybe I'm nitpicking. Who knows?
Well, one thing I did want to kind of talk about there that you mentioned with regards to the Ambrose and Reigns connection is something that Tony's actually talked about on this very show before, stating that if the time were to come that Dean were to turn on Seth if Roman were to leave, or if Roman and Seth and Dean were to go their separate ways and then Ambrose were to turn on Rollins, it would be because Ambrose was closer to Reigns and Reigns was the one keeping him from beating Seth's ass.
Yeah, it's like how often Andrew stops me from beating up Harry.
I mean, about at least 2,500 miles has to help that one, too.
Yeah, well, I'm a ambitious man.
Wow, okay. This should be fun.
I would never.
My new favorite wrestler is Apollo Crews.
Yeah, push Apollo, push Apollo.
How well that goes.
Elias, it does it. We've tried before. Elias in the ring for a special performance. He runs down Lashley and praises San Diego, stating that he would never want to take his talents to Los Angeles, thus earning himself heat with Tony. Elias has a match with Leo Rush later and plans to teach him a lesson before playing a song stating that he can't stop thinking about how bad Bobby Lashley sucks. Elias, if you can't stop thinking about Bobby Lashley, I'm afraid you have bigger problems. The match itself sees Heath Slater as the referee and Bobby Lashley coming in for what basically turns into a no disqualification match to break a guitar over Elias's back. Leo Rush gets the pin. Tony, we've talked about it before that we want to see the guys from 205 Live weaving into the storylines on Raw a little bit more seamlessly. Is this what you had in mind?
I don't remember saying that. It's not so much like, you know, using him. I mean, he has a specific role, and as much as we despise him, he's doing it well for the most part.
I like
him. Seeing him in a match with Elias, it didn't really do much for me, but again, that wasn't for us as much as the story behind it was or around it. Can we just get to the match and hopefully not have to see it again? And then when we get to the match, we figure it's a ladder match with a guitar hanging. I haven't seen much of that other show that was like blue and black. But I do remember it being relatively gimmick heavy. And this just seems like one of those matches that would be over on that. That thing. That's what it's called.
Oh, poor Tony never really crossed the line, huh, is what you're saying?
They never really had a big impact
in that regard. I
think it actually was in TNA where there was some kind of, like, guitar on a pole match. Probably involved Jeff Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett probably
most likely. Actually,
it wasn't quite the King of the Mountain match.
Actually, if I'm not mistaken, just because I am way too big of a wrestling nerd, I believe it was the very first TNA pay-per-view that did Jeff Hardy versus Jeff Jarrett guitar up in the air with a ladder match.
It's plausible. That definitely sounds very Jarrett and very TNA. And, yeah, I mean, Tony, yeah, that was close enough. It's really gimmicky. It's really stupid. There is no weaving with the 205 Live guys on Raw. Like, Leo Rush looked like a pile of shit. Like, Elias threw him around. Lashley had to get involved multiple times. They had to cheat. They had to intimidate the referee just for Leo to then hit him with a guitar to keep him laid out long enough and then get a three count. Leo Rush didn't even hit anything, like a shooting star press or anything cute, like to make it seem like, oh, Leo beat him. It was garbage.
Have you guys ever been out in public and you saw like a mom who wasn't all that great of a mother and her toddler child was wearing like a shirt but no pants and had this like ugly diaper and you just thought
every
to yourself
day.
Like you should really take care of your child, right? Leo Rush came out to the ring looking like that. He had this vest on with trunks and it just he looked like a kid whose mother accidentally lost him somewhere, like a park, and he just didn't know what he was doing. Even his hair looked bad. I mean, I don't know, man. Don't ever come out like that again, please. Don't.
Isn't this basically what Elias has been saying about Leo Rush since he got paired with Bobby Lashley, though? That somebody left their kid behind and Lashley just apparently decided to adopt him?
Look, I'm just, as a friend, I wouldn't allow my friend to go out wearing a tight-fitted vest and trunks. It wasn't a good look. Now, we've seen wrestlers wear T-shirts and trunks. We've seen wrestlers wear jeans and no shirt. We've seen it all. But for whatever reason, this look just did not work.
Welcome to Queer Eye for the Wrestling Guy, starring Tony and Sarah.
Anybody got time for that?
Oh, wow. Speaking of queer.
Is it a Darren Young segue?
Because he's gay.
Ah, yeah, thank you. Just like Nia Jax, she's fat.
Man, I am so disappointed that he didn't go there. Ah, I teed him
I know
up
you
perfectly.
Are. I knew it. I was waiting for it, too.
So Lance Storm tweeted a question that we should bring up considering we're talking about Lashley versus Elias. And he said, wait,
really?
The Drifter and Lashley
what do you got
are having
Lance
a ladder
Storm?
Match. Probably because he's boring.
Half of what he says, but...
They're having a ladder match where the guitar is hung and the first person to get it can use it as a weapon. Doesn't the match end when they grab the guitar or is this match won by pinfall? Now, it's a very obvious question. We know the rules. But it's just one of those things where it's like, that's what we mean.
There was a kendo stick on a pole match like a year or so ago, and that just meant you got to use it. Stop it. WWE does this all the time. They don't have to explain things. It's entertainment. You just want to see people get hit with chairs. See, it's wrestling. Lance Storm is asking logical questions to an illogical thing.
I seem to remember Carlito and Sandman having a Singapore cane on a pole match where it was just whoever got the cane got to use it as well.
See? And with Carlito, I just thought it would be apples and he just gets to spit them at people. That would have been different.
Well, it was Sandman, so that's where the cane came from.
Okay, so Sandman gets beer, Carlito gets apples. First one to slip loses.
Open floor.
Put any extra effort into their match win.
Open forum turns into the Nia Jax promo segment. I thereby go use the restroom rather than sit and listen to her. Do you guys have any thoughts?
Why did you call it an open forum if all it was going to be was a Nia Jax promo? Why did you let
because
Nia Jax speak?
Because it's a new thing.
Rhetorical. Never mind.
Why did you allow Tamina to wrestle Ember Moon and look like a stilted fat broom?
They both kind of look bad.
Yeah.
In fairness,
it was one of those
at least Ember got the win this week.
Well, you know how Andrew says that Ember always has one gear? Now, it's not always noticeable when she's wrestling somebody who can kind of either keep up or slow her down when necessary. But when you wrestle Tamina, who's basically like Play-Doh left out in the sun for 3 days, it is incredibly noticeable. Like,
oh, wait,
wow.
Are you talking about that time when she bounced off the ropes and came through for like a kneeling flatliner type thing and had to like run, stop, and crouch down, then kind of do the move? And I'm sitting there going, that was the most awkward, retarded thing I've ever seen.
And this is every Tamina match. With Ember Moon, as a little,
wasn't Tamina's fault. She was in position.
Right. But I'm just saying that it's clunky. It's not flowy. It's not pretty.
At least Tamina did hit the decent super kick off the springboard, and it didn't look awful.
That's true.
There we go. I can find a positive.
I'm also a little bothered at the fact that Ronda gets I don't want to say cornered because there were two of them, but they both hop up on the apron. They look like they're about to attack, and then the surprise is Ember Moon coming down to help her. Like, it's supposed to be a surprise. Like, oh, shit, she's got backup. Thank God, right? And then we get a match with Tamina versus Ember Moon. It wasn't an impromptu match. The match was going to happen. It was scheduled to happen. So what you're saying to me is that Michael Cole being all shocked and awed at Ember Moon coming down to help probably shouldn't have happened, right? Because you knew this match was happening. You knew likely it was coming on next. So
but
why
did
are you,
you know? Did you know they were friends? That's what's so surprising. The two face characters and there's two heels and they're friends. They're friends, Tony. Don't you understand?
All I can understand in my small, feeble mind is that Nia Jax was once Ember Moon's person that she looked up to. Ember is her protege, and they're just not working right now.
That's true. That's so true. It hurts me every time.
God, to know that Nia taught her so much and just ditched
her. I cry every time. It's a better love story than Twilight.
Okay, that doesn't take much. It's not either here nor there. I can't even with you two sometimes.
Harry's love for Apollo Crews is better love story than Twilight.
I mean, Apollo got further with Sasha than you have so far. So hey, don't be jealous.
You don't know that. You don't know that.
Hey, the Jelly School is on the line. They want to talk to you, Tony.
Hey, did you know someone in the comment section of the Raw Report said that I look like Aaron Solo?
So you're banging Bailey?
I guess so. They said he looks kind of like Bailey's fiance or husband. I don't think I do.
No, I don't see it other than the fact that he's slightly ethnic looking.
He's saying I was brown, so I must be him.
Was that racist? Well, that felt racist.
A little bit.
Is that racist?
it's a little racist, yes.
They're
both slightly brown. They must be related.
They're all related. That's how this works.
Fuck them.
God damn it.
Oh,
I thought I was going to
so
make
Andrew,
it through a full
before
show.
Before we continue, I have a story. I have this guy.
Okay.
His name is Preston, and he's kind of a regular over at my bar. Super cool guy, drinks like 7 IPAs, and he's relatively fine. Either that or he's just on a constant page of drunk, so it doesn't come off as weird when he's, inebriated.
Hair of the dog,
found
yeah.
Found out that he's a wrestling fan, so much, in fact, that he calls it wrestling, which is cool in itself.
Oh, boy.
He has, he's got, actually, Harry, he's got a few toys that are old. I'm going to have him take a couple of pictures, and I'll send them your way to see if you like them, because he may just be getting rid of them. Anyways, one of those old-school wrestling fans who, just watched the old shit and loved it and now doesn't know what us young kids are into. That's the only segue I have to the beautifulness of this next part that I'm going to tell you. He recently cut his hair to basically almost bald. So now he has this gray kind of weird patchy thing with a balding center. And I want to know, Andrew, if you remember the episode of Aqua Teen Hunger Force where they see Jesus in the butt of a gun on a billboard. And there's a hobo on the top of the billboard that's like, Jesus. And he just jumps and kills himself. This guy, Preston, looks exactly like that guy.
Oh, my God. That's fantastic.
I'm going to take a picture and send it to you. I asked him, can you say gee whiz? And he's like, fuck you.
Oh, that's great. Holy shit. That's a good story. The lead up was definitely worth it.
And since we've already discussed the main event, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Raw Reaction.
Great.
Let's get to our final reaction,
and
then we'll do some.
In this 14-minute episode of this television show, they don't say Jesus because it's offensive, so they change the name to G-Wiz. And the three characters see G-Wiz in the butt of a gun, and it turns out to be the image of Ted Nugent, not Jesus. And he comes out shooting flaming arrows. And you can't make this shit up, man. It's a beautiful thing.
Hey, I love the episode when Danzig was on there and he was, I think, trying to buy the house because the walls were bleeding or whatever the hell that story was. Oh, that was so good.
And he yelled, "Estable."
So you guys are going to end up in the
You guys are going to end up starting an Aqua Teen Hunger Force appreciation podcast here on the network.
Every
I do still own
the
first two seasons.
Oh, I got them. I got them all.
You do? Oh, that's nice.
I
stopped after the first two just because I think they were expensive and I was kind of broke years ago.
Yeah. And teachers were the weirdest things ever. It's like these guys were on more. They must have been on ketamine or something. I remember one bonus feature was they played every episode on your screen at the same time. That was the bonus feature.
I'm gonna have to check my bonus features now, though.
I don't think
I really went through them.
Now I'm checking Hulu to see if they put Aqua Teen Hunger Force on Hulu.
I know it's on there, but only like the later seasons that got kind of weird. The first four seasons.
The later seasons got kind of weird.
Yeah, but not good weird, like bad weird. Like, you know, yeah, we get it that it's a giant meatball, a shake, and talking fries, and they're living next to a big fat Italian guy, and like to swim in his pool, and shit happens. That's weird, yes, but this was bad weird.
Tony is correct. It is only the final two seasons on Netflix.
Imagine a turf war between two different races of aliens flipping each other off and mooning themselves with square butts, ordering pizza for one another. Oh, my God. So good.
We are the Moonanites. Yes.
I got a straight six. Oh, my God. There's so many good things.
No Aqua Teen on Netflix, in case anybody's wondering. So maybe, like, what's that one anime over-the-top video service? Crunchyroll?
Oh,
I
my little brother.
Crunchyroll. Crunchyroll.
Yeah.
Is it on there, maybe? Maybe that's how you could catch up if you wanted to, Andrew?
No, Aqua Teen Hunger Force probably would not be on Crunchyroll because it's not an anime.
It's animated.
Yes, but anime is the shortened version of
I know,
Japanimation,
the Japanese
which it was known
version,
as
yes.
In the 90s. Yes. Good old Japanimation Sundays and Saturdays.
Favorite match or moment from tonight's episode of Raw, Tony?
This fucking conversation. Oh, my God. what the fuck? Drew McIntyre's promo. I was just... Never have I seen someone be able to destroy the mystique behind an undefeated streak the way that he did. I feel like that was overlooked and people don't understand what they just saw. That was great.
Andrew.
Well, I'm going to have to agree with Frylock, man. You know, Drew McIntyre, he got that shit, man. He's our life. Everybody's undefeated. Even Andre the Giant lost his streak, and WrestleMania is a piece of crap. Like, that's true, man. That's true.
Fucking me, Waz.
I'm so pissed Greg yells at me for doing a Vince McMahon impersonation right now, because if I could, I would.
You
right
that
now.
I'm drunk. You can't decide that I'm drunk. Oh, my God.
Hey, people don't really do a Meatwad impression, so at least I've got that niche market cornered.
That's for damn sure.
My favorite match or moment from tonight's episode of Raw was Apollo Crews military pressing Sasha Banks because I knew it would trigger Tony.
Jesus Christ, you're just continuing that.
All honorable mention to Seth Rollins for his performance in the TLC match, bumping around like a madman to make that look somewhat watchable. Greg Watry, Tony.
Apollo Crews putting his finger on
him. I knew it. I almost said it for him. I saw that one coming. Andrew?
Who does he think he is? Who said that was okay?
She did. She gave him consent ahead of time.
No.
She consented. Yeah. It was consensual.
She said,
pick me up and throw me. She did. Yeah.
She didn't
she
say,
did,
put
but,
your
hey,
finger slightly caressing my vagina.
Whoa. It's called dealer's choice. It's called, like, artistic vision or whatever you want to say. He has to be thrown. That's all that was. Shit.
Okay, we'll remember that when the next court case comes around. It's called dealer's choice, Your Honor.
I mean, it's as good as the Chewbacca defense. You know, be like, no. Your Honor, this is Chewbacca. He's a Wookiee. But, oh, yeah, Greg Watry. The whole natty thing, that's all bad.
Now, if you guys want to continue debating this for a few more seconds, by all means, go for it.
That's fine. I'm a master debater.
Oh, me too.
I'm very well aware, Tony.
Did you get your varsity letter in it, too?
Yeah. I was a magna cum laude.
I see what you did there.
Hey, Tony.
Yes.
You have a vagina!
First and only love.
You can't say only, or then the whole Apollo Crews argument's out of the window.
I love Sasha. I lust her. I'm aware.
Aw, Puddin.
Oh, this has been the Raw Reaction. Tony's leaving.
I'm with Andrew on his Greg Watry. I'm going with the Natalya segment as well. Scale of 1 to 10, Tony, where do you fall?
4? Yeah, 4.
Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going to say the same 4 because, like, there's just nothing to this show. Like, what did it really push forward? Like, do we really care about the random fluky win for Gable and Rude, and they're probably going to drop the titles back on a pre-show match to fucking AOP, either at the pay-per-view or they're going to get some kind of next week bullshit, or I don't know. Like, it's just nothing about the show was overly inspiring, hence why we talked about multiple different things that weren't Raw today.
You know what I thought about when I was watching, what's his name? Drew McIntyre kicked Dolph Ziggler in the face near the ring apron.
That is just
what
a beautiful moment.
Well, yeah, aside from that, what if during the Greatest Royal Rumble that was there and Titus, like, flew into that shit with his neck? Man.
I will let you find a gif of Yoshihashi going face first into the hard part of the ring because there wasn't any opening and then coming up all bloody in that one New Japan show. That's what would have happened. Titus would be dead.
Yoshihashi. Okay, hold on. I just typed Yoshi and that green dude came up from Mario.
That's a dinosaur. Yoshihashi. There has to be a hyphen between it. And then you'll see he does the Titus World Slide face plant. I think it was, I want to say it was King of Pro Wrestling. He was supposed to come in for this big save on the angle that was, they spent all this time building up and then he just trips and goes face first into the apron and comes up with his face full of blood.
Fucking awesome. Is he okay now?
I mean, he wasn't dead anyway, but, like, he's fine enough.
Okay.
Are you still looking for the GIF?
Right now I see... Oh, shit. No, that must not be it. Tommy Dreamer just... Was that Tommy Dreamer? Someone just threw a chair at his face.
I mean...
Oh, nope, here it is. Wow, how rude. The person that tweeted said the dumbass tripped and smashed his head open on the side of the ring. I love you, Yoshihashi.
Yeah, that's a lot of no chill right there in one tweet.
I know, right?
All right, I'm back.
That's not even a good angle.
Well, hopefully they got the good angle, because in the replay they stopped actually showing that. They like jump cut it away from it just so it wouldn't look as ridiculous.
Wait, what did I miss?
We were filling time with the Yoshihashi spot because Tony asked what would happen if, you know, Titus went headfirst into something instead of just under the ring. So I told him, look up the Yoshihashi spot from King of Pro Wrestling, I believe.
Ah, okay. So once again, Anthony attempts to bring New Japan into the Raw reaction.
Hey, we needed to vent because your phone exploded, so, you know, that one's on you.
If it makes you feel any better, Andrew, I am actually planning on watching Wrestle Kingdom.
I mean, you should. That whole card is kind of stacked.
There's a lot of Chris Jericho on that, so therefore I'm into it.
That's a fair point. Like, you know, if Jericho's what brings you to the dance, I'm okay with that.
All right. Real quick here. My overall rating for my episode of Raw is a 5.5. I enjoyed it a little bit more than you guys did. I thought it flowed a lot better than the last few weeks of Raw have. And it wasn't as difficult of a watch as the previous couple of episodes of Raw have been. So, therefore, I'm going to give it a higher rating than the last few episodes. Who's your MVP for tonight, Tony?
I'll say Drew. I really enjoyed that promo.
Andrew?
It's got to be Drew McIntyre. He's the best thing going on in Raw right now.
I'm tempted to give it to Apollo Crews, but instead I'm going to give it to Seth Rollins. Me and Tony have heat now, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he didn't even pop or anything. Like, he's just giving you the silent treatment.
Well, I'm pretty sure we had heat before, but this just confirmed it.
And then in good old Tony Pun fashion, Tony could always just say, I've always got heat. I live in California.
Ayo.
Hey, there we go.
All right, let's get back into the actual ending of the show here. It is a pay-per-view go-home tonight on Raw, so let's do some predictions for TLC this Sunday. I know, right? You wouldn't have never guessed with the 6,000 times they tried to tell you.
Are you telling
you
me
know
that they had a TLC match the week of a pay-per-view called TLC? They gave me
that
actually
depends. That depends. Does the week start on Sunday or Monday to you? Because some people say the week starts on Sunday.
I don't know, man. My work
the week
schedule
starts
is really
on
weird.
Monday.
My week starts on Wednesday.
Oh, that's, see, it's totally
very
different then.
He's usually off on Tuesday, so his week does start Wednesday.
So there we go. Maybe it's the week before. It's all how you want to look at it.
Elias versus Lashley with a guitar on a ladder on a pole on a Vince Russo is apparently back with the fucking company. Tony?
Elias.
Andrew.
No one cares but Elias.
I'm going to make it 3-for-3 for Elias here. Balor versus McIntyre. Tony?
Drew McIntyre.
Andrew?
Same.
Finn Balor. Because why the fuck not?
Sure.
Natalya versus Ruby Riott in a tables match. Can I pick no one because I am the table?
So the Jim Neidhart one just won't break and he'll win somehow?
Yes, Jim Neidhart goes over. Tony?
Yeah, Natalya's going to win.
Andrew?
Yeah, you have to pay it off with the face going over. This has dragged on too long and been too much of the face losing every exchange, really. So, yeah. Old school wrestling mentality has to work out here.
I think Natalya gets partial revenge, but not full. I think she puts Liv and Sarah through a table, but Ruby wins the match. The women's title is on the line when Ronda Rousey... The women's title is on the line when Ronda Rousey faces...
Well, I can't fully replicate that sound, So I'll just say that Ronda Rousey beats the insert snoring sound bite here.
Yeah, same.
No,
don't even lose your breath,
be...
Harry. Just go, Harry. It's fine. I'm picking Ronda too. What's your choice? You gonna pick the snore?
No, I'm picking Ronda. And for the record, that was no soundbite. That was actually me. Anyway, the Raw heavyweight title. Well, no, the Raw heavyweight title isn't on the line at this pay-per-view, but the Intercontinental title is Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose.
I mean, if this heel turn would have worked, I'm sure Ambrose would be a shoo-in for the title because it makes sense. That's just how they do things. But I don't know, man. I think they're really – I think they're seeing Seth as the savior of Raw, and I think we saw evidence of that tonight. So I'm going to say Seth keeps the title.
Andrew?
Ooh, static. But, yeah, I'm going to – kind of agree with Tony where I think they're seeing Seth as the new, I guess, face of Raw, but that's more reason for him to lose to me because, you know, you can elevate him to the Universal status, then maybe him and Drew can have a nice little program right before Royal Rumble, and then who knows, maybe Seth goes over Rumble. I don't know, but, you know, I would rather see Ambrose take the title.
Yeah, I think Ambrose gets the belt here. The reason I say that is because I believe that Rollins might be your odds-on favorite to win the Rumble with Roman Reigns' retirement. The previous rumor that had come out was that The Rock was supposed to win the Rumble to set up a match with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania. But now that Roman's officially off of the Mania card here, I think that Seth winning to set up a rematch with Brock Lesnar for the Universal Championship might be the way to go. Either that or Seth wins the Elimination Chamber match to set up his number one contendership, and The Miz wins the Rumble for SmackDown to set up a match with Bryan for the title at Mania. For the general managership of Raw and a potential Universal Championship opportunity for Strowman, it is Strowman versus Corbin. Tony?
Strowman, please just show up and squash him and just end this already. Please, thanks. And if you want to truck Apollo
Andrew.
On the way to the ring, that's fine.
backstage and catering.
He just knocks him over through something, it's fine. Don't worry, it's Apollo.
And then
eats
his chocolate cake.
Is sexual?
God, I hope not.
I'm just saying, because, you know, you were talking about Apollo here, so.
Make a prediction.
It's who really wants Corbin to win this? Like, I could see them maybe doing it, but it's awful. So go Strowman, please, just once.
Since they have the other matches officially confirmed and they added the extra stipulation onto Elias versus Lashley, I don't think the rumored six-man happens. I think Strowman does show up, and this is a squash match. Strowman in like 2 minutes. Moving over... God damn it. Moving over to the SmackDown side of things, Daniel Bryan defends the SmackDown heavyweight title against AJ Styles. Tony?
Daniel Bryan.
Picking Bryan.
Don't let him find your water bottle, Andrew.
I don't use water bottles.
There's no reason to take the belt off of Bryan. There's no reason to take the belt off of Bryan this early. I think Bryan retains through some kind of underhanded tactics. I would not be surprised to see the same finish from SmackDown once again repeated at TLC with the low blow kick and then the Baisuku knee. SmackDown Live women's title on the line in a triple threat TLC match as Becky Lynch defends against Charlotte and Asuka. Tony?
Oh, shit. Becky Lynch, I hope. I wouldn't be mad if Asuka won, but it wouldn't make much sense considering she's done nothing for months, and I definitely don't want to see Charlotte win.
Andrew?
As much as I agree with that logic,
I feel like you don't put Asuka in there unless it's for the swerve and to put the belt on her and then just have some big blow off between Becky and Charlotte, or since they're both kind of sort of heels at the moment, maybe something happens and you get Shayna Baszler and the horsewomen come up and then they have to unite. So it takes them both kind of out of the title picture, but still on them on a high enough platform that they don't lose any luster. But yeah, I'm going to go with Asuka because why not?
With the Women's Royal Rumble match happening once again next year, that leaves the two champions out of the Rumble probably. That is the opportunity to once again do Ronda versus Charlotte. I think that happens. Charlotte wins this match. I don't want Charlotte to win this match, but that's the way I see it going. The SmackDown Tag Team titles are on the line when The Bar faces The New Day and The Usos in a triple threat. Again, rumor that I'm hearing says a ladder match, not confirmed. Tony?
Oh, shit. You said a ladder match isn't confirmed?
It is not confirmed, but it is rumored.
You know what? Let me find a coin to flip.
One that has three sides?
I was going to say, that's going to be an awfully awkwardly shaped coin.
It's a triangle.
Okay, I flipped it. And it said, whatever Andrew says.
Oh, that's an interesting coin right there, sir.
Yeah. That's seven sides.
Are you sure you didn't just roll dice then? Like, that's an awkward-ass coin. That's why they invented dice.
It was actually a magic 8-ball.
Oh, that'd be great. You should just shake an 8-ball. Let's see, you know. Answer foggy. Try again later. Shit. Okay. I'm going to go with the Usos. You know, Cesaro started shit with Big Show.
You know what, Harry? So, I changed my mind. I'm going to decide on my own. I'm going to go with the Usos.
Oh, smart ass. Just didn't like my answer. They're like, no, it's not going to be the Usos. I can't pick that. So, okay, what's your pick then, Tony? Come on.
I'm sorry. That was a longer bit than I wanted it to be.
Come on, bitch.
Yeah,
come on, what's your...
the Usos for sure. I think that, I don't know, I've always liked the Usos, and they're more interesting than the other teams as of right now. So,
yeah, that's kind of where I was going to end up with it, too, where, you know, The Bar started shit with the Big Show. You know, Usos are the best team. They won the freaking only match at SmackDown 1 at a Survivor Series. And the New Day don't need it. Like, I'm kind of over them being champion. So, yeah, Usos.
I think The Bar retains, and I eventually think it leads to Big Show finding a partner and challenging The Bar for the titles. Quite possibly Nicholas, because why not?
That's cool. You put yourself on mute for putting that into the universe. Fucking Christ. You're fucking two-time 10-year-old champion. What the fuck, Kenny Omega? You stop that shit.
You're a big
He's 11 now. Thank you.
How do you know when his birthday is? Did you go to his party? Did you bring Penelope the Lucha House Party pinata?
Hey, what the fuck was up with Seth Rollins baby-facing the Revival in that opening segment?
Because they are, because the Lucha House Party were heels. They've been cheating.
We've been duped.
Speaking of cruiserweights, cruiserweight title is the last match we'll predict. Buddy Murphy defends against Cedric Alexander. Tony?
Buddy's the champion? Yeah, he keeps it.
Correct. Andrew?
Last match on our run sheet, first on the pre-show. Ah, oh, it's so sweet. But, yeah, Buddy, like, there's no reason to put it back on Cedric. Like, it was a nice 8-month run or whatever he had as being undefeated, but now it's, we don't need to see Cedric facing the same, like, three heels that 205 Live has again. So, let's keep it on Murphy.
Well, they do have Mike Kanellis now.
I repeat, the same three heels because he's fucking awesome.
But it does give us Maria. So anytime Maria shows up on my TV, I'm pretty happy.
Harry is a simple man, everyone.
I have never denied that. Do we have a prediction for the Mixed Match Challenge? More importantly, do we fucking care?
No, not really. But why? My question before everybody else answers is, why would you have anybody who was already on the card with a match in this Mixed Match Challenge bullshit?
It's going to work out that they're not. Because the finals, well, in my opinion, if I had to make predictions, the finals are going to be Jinder Mahal and Alicia Fox against R-Truth and Carmella.
That's kind of how I was seeing it going, too. And I just like, that sounds kind of awful, but at least we'll get a dance break.
And I could see that leading to respective dance breaks in their respective rumbles as well. I don't know. Ever since she started teaming up with R-Truth, I've been noticing just how hot Carmella really is. So
it's because
kind of slept on Carmella. It might be. I've been sleeping on Carmella. She's actually a very attractive young lady.
I'm not disagreeing.
Tony,
with
nothing.
You.
Yeah,
Tony, nothing.
She dyed her hair. It's definitely because she dyed her hair. And she still has the face that be cool to have sex with, but when you wake up in the morning, you'd need new pillowcases.
That's not cool.
But it's true.
Yeah, but she was like a cheerleader and a dancer, so just imagine how flexible she is. That's always fun.
That was my theory with Layla, too.
Oh, yeah, and Melina. Oh.
America!
I would have tied her in a pretzel and had some fun.
Yeah, I get the slip on. She had a nice padunk, but I don't know. I just didn't like her face. And we
I didn't either, but the flexibility won me over. Like, that's all. I'm like, Jesus Christ, look at what I can do to her.
Tony, I have three simple words to that, then we're going to wrap this up. Brown paper bag.
I mean, up is kind of what we were thinking about with her, too, with the legs and all the different spots you can put her. Like when it comes to Melina and Layla, like, I was drawing up, like, football gadget plays where I'm just like, I could put her leg behind her ear there. We could do this. I could get, like, a can of whipped cream. Like, it was fucking fantastic.
And there goes what little chance any of us ever had of getting hired by the WWE.
Hey, Vince would find this shit funny. Shut up. He made urine jokes for 3 weeks.
Melina, Tony, Tony, where can people find you online?
Megan's Law. You just type my name in there. A little dot will show up.
Did Chris Hansen show up to your bar and he's just like, Tony, have a seat.
You see, you heard a lot of Shirley Temples this week. We need to talk about that.
I see the Shirley Temples were virgins, but they necessarily weren't, huh?
All right, how about a legitimate answer so we can get out of here?
411mania.com is where I do the Raw Report every week. And, you know, the usual Twitter is TonyAcero411. That's all I want you to know.
Any updates on plans of coming to ChairShot with more consistent articles?
I mean, you know, it's there. It's hanging around. And Greg hits me up at least twice a week, you know. But I don't want to half-ass it. And if I started right now, it would definitely be half-assed.
If Tony's going to ass anything, he's going to whole-ass it.
Yep.
Andrew, where can people find you online?
You can find me on the Twitter at IWC Warchief. And, of course, you know, thechairshot.com and all these wonderful ChairShot Radio Network things, the podcasts. And, ooh, by the by, since I usually do the top five matches of the week, but this week was a little different because we have to wind down to actually get through the matches of the year, we're doing the November vote and second chance qualifier matches, which the only reason I bring that up because Eric Ames, our social media director, kind of messaged me and told me that Brian Cage just retweeted the top five because I threw on his match against Tessa Blanchard from Wrestle Circus earlier this year and made that the wonderful, you know, feature thumbnail image with him just body pressing her with one arm. And his hand is on her stomach, Tony. So, you can stop with the hashtag me too. So, yes, Brian Cage, you know, he respects women. He knows how to bench press them and throw them. Brian Cage, he's a man for all seasons, for all, all Twitter demographics.
Forgot to mention I saw him propose last week.
I was just about to bring that up.
Yeah.
Oh, so you were actually there, Tony.
I was there.
He posted a video on his Facebook feed. He might have posted it in the chair shot as well. In the chair shot.
Was Melissa happy?
Yeah, she was ecstatic about it. It was this was the first time that I went to this venue. I think like 3 months ago, Bar Wrestling started throwing two events a month, which is amazing in indie standards. Their second location was in like one of the seediest places in LA that I've ever been. The streets were lined with tents and homeless people. There was a leak right above the ring, so there was this huge water spot, probably swimming with staff. It was a small crowd. A Jack and Coke was $13. But it was a great show.
I was waiting for the spin because I'm like, it sounds horrible. Continue.
Yeah. Melissa got proposed to. Doomfly was there. Dean Gabriel. I don't know his new name. He had a match with
PJ Black.
That wasn't really a match as much as it was like them just kind of slapping each other. I don't know. It was weird.
Eli is fantastic, though.
Yeah, he was great. He rubbed black shirt on his dick and then threw it at a girl in the crowd, which was great. Joey Ryan faced Peter Avalon in a thumb wrestling contest, which was the highlight of the night for sure.
I guess when you own the promotion, you can do what you want, right?
Right, yeah, it was funny because I walked into the venue, and of course all the wrestlers had their merch out. Joey was the only one that had this, like, double-tiered fucking merchandise stand that went, like, in front of him and on the side of him, like an L-shaped, with all of his stuff up. Everybody else had, like, a table with their shirts. I'm like, okay, Joey.
Hopefully Joey's back in the ring sooner rather than later. Anybody ever find out if he's actually going to have – did he have the surgery on the bicep?
The last information that I got was that he got a second opinion, and they're considering the idea of rehab as opposed to surgery because he may not need it considering how good he's doing with the healing process right now.
Well, that's good to hear that he's not going to miss as much time there. Ryan had a breakout year on the indie scene this year, similar to another man who unfortunately is going to lose a lot of time due to injury, that being Joey Janela, who rumors were WWE was actually interested in before he suffered his complete and total knee blowout.
Impact was interested in him, too, because he was supposed to be Eli's mystery opponent at Bound for Glory, not Abyss, and Ellsworth.
Oh, God, Ellsworth.
Hey, this was before that happened.
Ellsworth, you mean Ellsworth, she's 16?
She's 16.
Hey, you know, Chris Hansen gets around when he asks people to sit down, so it works itself out. See how we brought that all about full circle? It's nice.
That's what we do.
Facebook,
we're so good at it.
Facebook at the chair shot by searching there. You can also search for the old name, Yes, 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 or Yes Wrestling. Twitter, HEB the Eagle, even though I rarely use it. Eventually, Andrew is going to post my progress reviews to thechairshot.com. I don't know when, but eventually.
Schmuck, you didn't even look today, did you, bitch?
You didn't tell me you posted it.
Well, you should look at the site that you write for. I shouldn't have to tell you to look at the fucking site.
Well, okay, then. Go read progress chapter one on thechairshot.com.
I was hoping you'd bring it up because I wanted to get you on that one. I'm like, aha.
Son of a bitch. All right. We'll be back next Monday with our thoughts on TLC as well as the first episode of Raw on the road to Royal Rumble. Just as a programming heads up for everybody, next week's episode of The Reaction will be the final episode of The Reaction for 2018. Both Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve fall on Mondays this year. I am not going to ask these guys to cancel plans to do a podcast. You guys shouldn't expect us to do that either. We have family and friends to spend the holidays with. We will return with the first episode of Raw in January 7th, 2019. So join us next Monday night for the season finale, I guess technically, of the Raw Reaction here on the ChairShot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. For Andrew Ballas and Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanking you for listening. Tony, send us home.
Man, I would be so drunk if we did a New Year's Eve podcast. Y'all would be fucked.
Deuces, bitches!
Is this the final scene in our tragic play? Only curtains remain to
have been listening to The Raw Reaction here on the Chairshot Radio Network. Join us again next Monday night at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero, and Andrew Ballas present The Raw Reaction, a presentation of the Chairshot Radio Network, online at thechairshot.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. Like I said, season finale next Monday night, and then we're taking 2 weeks off for the holidays, and we'll be back at you on January 7th. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next Monday night. Thank you.